Welcome to the Leadership Podcast, brought to you by Life West, the Chiropractic College. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Oberstein.
And I'm your host, Dr. Mary Oberstein.
And we're excited to have you join us as we bring special guests in the world of health, leadership, business success, and chiropractic. Our mission is to create a brighter future for humanity, and we are thrilled to walk this journey with you.
Enjoy this episode, and thank you for being with us today.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. Ron Oberstein, president of Life Chiropractic College West, and welcome to another edition of our Life by Life West. Today, of course, I'm joined by my partner in health and life and love, Dr. Mary Oberstein. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
And we also have a really special guest with us today coming to us from Florida, Lake something, Florida. All I know is by the Everglades. So if an alligator comes by, we'll know that that's where it's at. I got Dr. Dave Traster. Hi, Dave. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. I'll give you a little bit of introduction on Dr. Dave. Dr. Dave graduated Life University in 2014. This is kind of freaky now. As he went through school, not only did he do his chiropractic program, but he was doing his diplomat in neurology, in addition to doing a master's course in sports health sciences. So three different degrees at one time. I know, just being the president of a college, Dave, it's hard enough to go through just doing the chiropractic program. So he must not have been spending his money at the bars that much, or doing, so I don't know, playing basketball and studying, right?
Yeah, it's just a lot of studying.
That kind of deal. Anyways, I think you get the picture. He's a very brilliant man. When he graduated, he stayed in Atlanta, worked at the Carrick Institute for a year, and then he went down to Miami and opened the practice up there. And then after that, or actually, that's not true. You did 2 years of consulting first, right?
Correct.
Flew all over the world, lecturing for the Carrick Institute for Neurology, working on difficult cases with people all over the world. And then after that, after those 2 years, settled into Miami with his wife, Dr. Kelsey. She's also a chiropractor and a diplomat in neurology, and was in Florida area. And then that was in 2017 and 2019. They opened the second clinic in Chicago, or somewhere in Illinois, I guess around Chicago. Mm-hmm. And right now they got both practices. They're back down in Florida. They've got a beautiful 16-month-old boy named Dylan. They've got a pretty impactful life, and they're doing amazing things, not only teaching chiropractors, working with chiropractors, working with patients, and all the things that they're doing. It's just incredible. So we hope to touch into some of that today to see how you juggle all of that, right? It's pretty crazy. But, you know, I think I want to start it off, Mary, if you'll allow me to. You know, David, with all the things that you're doing, and I know it's not an easy task, and I know the juggle, you know, it's not always easy, but let's talk about your passion, you know, because obviously there's got to be a passion to be driven. There's got to be a passion to be doing three, a master's and a diplomat and a doctoral course at one time. And that passion that also probably led you to your niche, you know, of what you're doing right now. Share with us about that and where that started.
Well, I never thought I would be where I am today. You know, I really thought I'd play basketball. I thought I'd be a professional somewhere in the world, save enough money, and then open up a business doing something, you know, not knowing what. But life changed. I got hurt. I got sick. You know, I had undiagnosed Lyme disease for about 9 years before I got diagnosed. And it led me, my dad's a pharmacist. I grew up in a very mainstream kind of world. And so it took me about, I don't know, maybe 7-8 years to see anyone but an MD or medical doctor, just because if anyone else worked, everyone would know about it, right? And then finally went that route, and it was a chiropractor who really helped me. And so when I got to chiropractic school, it was because the person who helped me was a chiropractor. I was interested in what he did. He told me he'd go to chiropractic school. I said, which one? He said Life University, and I left. Right. And I went, yeah, I was actually studying my MCATs at the time. I was looking to be a medical doctor. So I thought about specializing in Lyme. But then at the end of the day, it was a chiropractor who helped me the most. So I think that was where my passion began. It was studying health to try to figure out what was wrong with me. Yeah. And then once I found the Lyme route, figuring out what I could do about Lyme. And then once I got into chiropractic school, really beginning to understand what chiropractic was all about and how I could be the best chiropractor that I can be, first and foremost. And then second, what else can I do as a chiropractor? Who do I want to help? What kind of life do I want to live? What kind of practice do I want to have? You know, so, but I think those are the kind of passions that fueled kind of the reason to study.
Wow. I didn't know that was your why.
Yeah. 100%. So I was one of those chiropractic students that was a former, one of those miracle patients where, you know, I was really, really sick with Lyme and I did medical route. I did IVs. I just couldn't handle the medicine. You know, I went to septic shock twice, almost died multiple times. And then finally someone said, I know a chiropractor, he does this, this, and this. And I went there and he helped me a lot.
So I have a question. That chiropractor, was he a diplomate in neurology?
No, nothing to do with neurology. Okay. Absolutely not. He was one of those, you know, one of those chiropractors from early Sherman days, you know. So he was a Sherman guy and he was a straight chiro his whole life until about the 90s. And then his whole philosophy was he felt people were getting harder to get 100% better in the whole realm of things, the way he used to do things. And so he entered more into kind of more alternative medicine and went down his rabbit hole. And so he did a lot of supplementation, alternative medicine, energy medicine, adjusting, obviously. But he just went down that rabbit hole. So he happened to get me better using a lot of German homeopathy and herbs and things I really was not exposed to. I didn't think it would get me better. I was very skeptical of at the time. And it just happened to work, you know?
You know, it's Mary, it sounds like one of those typical stories of why didn't someone tell this to me 9 years earlier, right?
Yeah, I know.
You know, I mean, seriously, it's like, you know, we were just kind of led down the, I don't even think we're led down. On some level, we're led down just from society, right? It's just the path that's there. And people don't know that there's these other paths and they don't have to be these small paths. There's these big lanes. You know, I think, Dave, you probably see now because of the crazy cases that you see. When I say crazy, I mean, just amazing, you know, neurological things that are going on. You probably see more and more that the lane is getting wider and wider, right? You know, medicine, the medical path is kind of shrinking, right? Whereas this other path is just opening up, and I'll just call that path natural health, whatever it may be, right?
I think so. And I think I was actually, before my son was born, I was starting a PhD in neuropsychology, because I think when you look at healing, a lot of it starts with psychology. And to your point, if you told me how to get better 10 years ago or 20 years ago, 10 years before I got better, I wouldn't have done it. Right? It wasn't even open to that idea yet, you know? So I think, like you said, it takes time for someone to break down some of those barriers that we're cultured with, you know, depending on your upbringing and other factors. And for me, it took a long time for me to kind of see a different path.
And Mary, I don't know if you have a thought, but here I am thinking, well, of course he's going to do a PhD in neuropsychology because he must be having withdrawals not being in school anymore, right?
Right.
After the 3 degrees and, you know.
His brain, your brain just needs that constant stimulation, that type of stimulation, huh?
I also just think that when you look, I mean, look, we will never maybe understand the full effects of chiropractic or an adjustment. But I think when you look at least what we know today with research, so much of adjusting, you could look at changing brain activity and brain connections. And when you start looking at psychology shifting is such a world where it's understanding behavior and the way the brain creates behavior and thoughts and trying to modify that. And so I really think everyone's going toward understanding the brain. But if you look at it from a brain perspective, I think, like I said, we'll never fully understand maybe the adjustment, but from a brain perspective, I think we're going to start seeing us going closer and closer to psychologists being able to change, like obviously as a chiropractor, being able to change more than back pain or more than physical symptoms, actually looking at changing the brain and changing emotions or cognition. And I know you guys are friends with researchers and people that are active in this. So that's why for me as a chiropractor, psychology is interesting as a merge, you know, between the two and really helping measure the outcomes of chiropractic and vice versa.
Right, right. That old thoughts, traumas, and toxins, right? I mean, and I think, you know, Dee Dee Palmer said that, you know, auto-suggestion and the thoughts are probably the number one cause of subluxation, you know, and I happen to agree with him, you know, on that. It's amazing. So, and it shows how amazing the brain is. I mean, you know, I don't know if you know this, Dave, but we work with a company called Wavi. WAPI and WAVI. I mean, they're just changing the brain. They can show changes through all through adjustments in brain change. They can show it through biofeedback. They can show it through just all kinds of different things. And it's all, it ultimately, at the end of the day, it all comes down to the nervous system, right?
100%. I think, from a purely brain perspective, kind of removing all other factors, I think when you, like you talked about, if you get stuck in negative thoughts or have a history of negative experiences, your brain's going to be altered, and that reflexively is going to change your muscle tone, which is going to alter your balance of your spine and other bones in your body. And at the same time, that feedback from the muscles and the joints are going to change your brain.
Right.
And so even if it starts with a thought and it's not a neck injury, it doesn't mean that you can't do an adjustment to the neck to impact the thought, or vice versa. You can make the case that maybe a good cognitive behavioral therapist, all of a sudden someone gets chronic neck pain, gets adjusted every week. And if you could change their thought pattern, maybe all of a sudden the adjustments start holding better, or maybe their muscle pattern changes, right? And so I think you can kind of go both ways and try to understand, if the brain is the target, what can we do to help alter the brain and change the neuroplasticity? And what do you want to do every day, right? I mean, as an acupuncturist, you could do it, right? But do you want to be an acupuncturist? We have a therapist who's looking to do kind of what we do, and she's trying to find her avenue, and she thought she'd be an acupuncturist. And I love acupuncture. But I said to her, but what would you do every day? Do you want to put needles in people's bodies? Do you want to talk to people? Like, what would your day be like as an acupuncturist? And she realized she's much more vocal and likes talking to people. And it might not be her everyday love to go in and just put needles in people's bodies and lay them down and leave.
Right.
So I think it's that everyday passion. It's not just what you're interested in. It's what are you going to wake up and passionate about?
Absolutely. And when you were talking about the nervous system, talking about the thoughts, I think that a lot of people don't see that the nervous system is a closed loop system, it can go this way and it can go this way, and it stays in the loop, right? Though it's closed, right? It's not open to where it just goes out. And so when we can start to infiltrate that closed loop, right, and be able to change it so that now as it's flowing, continuously with good thoughts, with less toxins and having the system just function to the best of its ability, we're going to see crazy healings. But talk about crazy healings. Obviously in my intro, we talked about how you were traveling all over the world for a couple of years doing consulting on just amazing cases, right? Kind of stuff. If I was to ask you, tell us like one of the wildest cases that you kind of saw that you were able to work with and just kind of shift, what would pop in your mind?
I specialize and I work with a lot of people who are dizzy, right? And so look at dizzy, like dizziness patients, vertigo, yeah. And you look at dizziness, about 50% at least of patients who are dizzy are not the classic diagnosis that we all learn in school, right? And if you've been in practice long enough, you know that, because you feel like it's 90% of people, because you feel like if someone's dizzy, it never adds up to what we learn in school, but at least 50% for sure. And I think what's interesting about dizziness is classically classified as a difference between your brain getting signals from your vision, from your inner ear, and from your neck and from your body.
Yeah.
And it's the feedback that all should say pretty much the same thing of where you are in space. And when one of those gets altered, your brain doesn't like it and it can feel dizzy, really simplified. And so I think a lot of what I see every day, you could just make quick changes, as we all seen as a chiropractor. Sometimes you could adjust someone's neck and their dizziness goes away instantaneously. And sometimes you could adjust someone's neck or someone's body and they can get dizzy. Right? It could go either way. And so, the reality is, right, you wish it always worked the way you want it to work. And so I think it just shows the interplay, which means that if someone's dizzy or someone has a gait problem or walking problem or is in a wheelchair, there's a certain percentage of patients that a chiropractic adjustment can instantaneously change their function and get them significantly better. Yeah. Right. And those are the patients that I love, just because it's great to get a patient better quickly. But I think when you look at what we can do, I think, like I said, I've specialized in neurological rehab, but I think we always got to go back to our foundation. And I think the musculoskeletal system and the feedback to the brain and what you can do with an adjustment is really some of the more powerful things you could do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when you look at crazy cases, it always comes down to, if I can get their feedback better from their body, and give them better spatial awareness, it seems like a lot of other things really get better quicker.
So is it the musculoskeletal system or is it more the nervous system? Because the musculoskeletal system needs something to fire it, right?
I get a lot of heat about this, but I always tell people the musculoskeletal system is a secondary feedback system, right? And when you look at really the receptors and the muscles, they're feedback, right? Position sensors, stretch sensors. So really when you think about the brain, a lot of us are trained as muscles, and a lot of us, especially if we were trained more than 10 years ago, we were trained really on biomechanics and physics and levers and pure muscle activity, right? And every muscle was individualized, right? Then the fascia people came and they kind of connected the muscles and said, look at the fascia. And now the brain people are looking at it all together. And so I think when you look at the big picture, it's more about where you are in space and what do you want to do? Like I always tell people, if you're going to build a robot, how would you make it walk? Right? People have a better chance of beating a chess master with a robot than they do hurdling in the Olympics, mm-hmm. right? Moving is really difficult. And part of that is the activity of going from point A to point B. And so when you look at the muscle activity, I don't look at the muscle, to me, it's a neuromuscular connection.
Yeah.
And I look at the muscles as a great feedback tool into the brain and the brain as a great feed forward and control mechanism over the muscle.
Right.
So when I start looking at muscle imbalances or subluxations or any alteration in tone, to me, you already kind of can assume that there's something off in the nervous system. The question is, where does that originate? In what system? And then what systems can you use as systems of activation
to access it in
the nervous system to try to change it? And what's the best modality for that patient?
Yeah.
And what's the modality that you use? Because maybe you have to co-manage with some people.
Absolutely. Right.
And so maybe you co-manage with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, or maybe you co-manage with, you know, so it really just comes down to trying to understand this person, why their brain functions, how they function, and what's the best inputs to kind of help them, not so much improve their symptoms, you know, it's more about what's limiting their life and maybe that symptoms, right? But what can you do to get someone from point A to point B in their life of why they're in your office? Because the people I see, the reason they're typically in my office is they're stuck in life for some reason.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a headache, right? And maybe it's dizziness, but the fact is they're not there because they're dizzy. They're there because they can't go to work or they can't go hang out with their friends, et cetera, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that one of your mentors, you know, Ted Carrick, right? Who, you know, is a very good friend of Mary and I had a conversation with him many years ago. And I said to him, Ted, you know, you're doing these phenomenal things with people who are really sick. I mean, bringing people out of comas and all the things that he's done and that he still does and just amazing, amazing things, you know, having the body shift and change and get unstuck, as you said, right?
Yep.
And I said to him this, I said, you know, but what would happen if you just focused on really healthy people?
Mm-hmm.
Like, taking healthy people, quote unquote, you know, I know there could be a debate around what is health, but you know, healthy people and up-leveling them to this place where they just become these neurological geniuses. Yeah. Like, what would that look like? You know, that kind of thing. And of course, Ted in his fashion said, yeah, I mean, it's great, but I got so many sick people I got to take care of. You know? That's Ted, of course, you know, but it's like, you know, when you think about that, you know, you really think about how do we up level that system that, you know, that regulates us and, you know, and just kind of just woof, create these neurologic, like we do with babies and you do with the other, you know, with children. It's just, it's amazing that to think about the potential that's there, right?
Absolutely. And I think that, like, you know, some of that is going to be lifestyle, diet. But when you look at the brain, I think that's the biggest push right now in technology. Is brain interface technology, right? And it doesn't have to be a chip. It could be, you know, lights over the skull. It could be electricity, magnets, you know, and I think you're seeing more and more people. There's obviously there's success to pharmaceuticals and there's reasons to have them, but we can't ignore the massive failures also.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I looked at my neuropsychology program in the first courses. I mean, it was interesting to see that's the focus is because so many, especially for children, so many psychotropic drugs were introduced in the early 2000s with for no reason, really. You know, they didn't really show that it ever helped and they had tons of side effects and they still got approved claiming they had no side effects and they helped. And so over the last 20 years, especially the psychology world has been really trying to figure out what can they do with that medication.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's been interesting to see that world too, because it's some of the theories you're like, are they a chiropractor? what are they talking about? You know, some of the PhDs were all about movement, exercise, and changing the brain. You know, so like I said, I think when you look at what works and what works, people that do it, eventually they're going to be sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
Some things work and some things don't, you know, and if you aren't blind to whatever your dogma is and you just kind of try to challenge your own thought process, you know, I think eventually you find that this, you know, this is the stuff that works.
I love it.
Yeah. So I'd like to pivot a little bit and talk about your practice.
Yep.
And your business. We had chatted earlier about getting your message out about business and understanding business. And I kind of want to hear not only how you started your business, but also like some of the things that you learned and some of the things, you know, that you learned the hard way.
I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have some businesses before chiropractic. And my undergrad was in like hospitality management, running hotels, restaurants, nightclubs. And so that gave me kind of some exposure to it. But obviously, until you do it, you don't realize just how long and the process of everything. But to answer your point, I think when I started chiropractic school, when the chiropractor that got me into it muscle tested, you know, and so I got into applied kinesiology and muscle testing and kind of that world. And so to me, that was a very different business model, you know, and as a, for example, if you're an applied kinesiologist or a lot of chiropractic techniques, which are all great, sometimes it's hard to find another person to come in and work with. If you're a doctor and you're great at your technique, the techniques can all have some variability. And so most techniques, although there are also some that are very much black and white, and then also, you know, it's a personality factor to it. And so I think as when I was thinking of being an AK doctor, it was more, it's gonna be me, myself in my basement. My overhead's gonna be as low as humanly possible. I'm gonna have some supplements. I'll live by the beach, you know, and it was really, you know, I had zero interest in trying to grow a practice for the simple fact that I thought it'd be difficult to have multiple personalities with a technique that an AK is just super gray, you know, of all techniques, it's gray, you know, it's one of the more dark gray ones. And I love AK, you know, but it's definitely, there's a, you talk to 10 AK doctors, they'll tell you 10 ways that you got to do something, you know, it'll be different. And so the neurology, again, what got me into neurology? I happened to be at Life University and a guy named Dr. Carrick showed up. Yeah, I never went to Life Club. I thought it was a bunch of smart people that just learned useless information and didn't know how to get anyone better.
Yeah.
That was my perception. So,
I was going to ask that question before. What was the pivotal moment though? Did you just go and check it out and said, oh, I'm into this?
I had friends that were there. The pivotal moment was Cindy Crosby, right? For a lot of people, you know, Cindy Crosby showed up and I said, wait a second, Cindy Crosby's on campus. Like, what's he doing at Life University? And, you know, he had 9 months. He was told he had to retire. He couldn't play. And in 3 days, I had friends that were with him saying he was on the ice, back on the ice. And 3 days later,
wow.
In 5 days, he's back on. And so, and I was there for a little bit. So I was, you know, I was lightly touching it. I was that close, but I would never jumped into it. And when I said, okay, well, I don't know about these guys, but Dr. Carrick knows how to get people better. You know, because that obviously worked. And then he kept showing up. And so I said, look, this is an opportunity of a lifetime to see what this is all about. Right. It wasn't an opportunity of a lifetime to learn it. It was just to see what it's about, to be exposed to it and see if I'm interested in it. And, you know, it wasn't my background. It wasn't that got me better, although it's helped me later on in life. Right. And what pulled me in was people that were suffering, that have been to a lot of different people that he was able to help. And I think what Dr. Carrick has done, to his credit, is find niches in healthcare where there's really not a great answer out there and that he has the best solution. And maybe tomorrow we'll have a better solution. He'll tell you, maybe tomorrow I'll go out of work because they've invented drug or supplement, you know, but right now this is the best option for these patients. And it's a whole in healthcare, you know? So while you can have so many things you can do to help people, I found an interest in the people he's helped because I realized there's no one helping these people.
Yeah.
And it wasn't what I thought I wanted to do. I would have never in a million years thought my practice would be neurological rehab, concussions, strokes, dizziness. But if I don't do it, I found there's not a lot of people that do a high level work.
Yeah. So Dave, listen, I think the way, you know, for a lot of our viewers is that would be, and I'm, at least my takeaway, I should say, is that you're really a master at what you do, or one of the masters. You know, I know you got a lot to learn, but you've really spent the last, whatever years, you know, just getting this stuff down, right? Last 8 years, whatever it is. And you're going to continue to grow. But opening up two practices, getting married, mm-hmm. having a baby, and the practices aren't like, you know, 30 miles away from each other. You know, they're more like, you know, 1,500 miles away or whatever it is to go from Chicago, that area to South Florida. You know, what were the challenges? I mean, there had to be challenges that were in there that you had to overcome or maybe still dealing with, you know. But what are some of those in the business, within the business?
Absolutely. So number one is, compared to AK from a neurological rehab perspective, while we give our doctors a lot of flexibility, it's much easier to protocol things and big picture it. And it's easier to kind of standardize and it's easier to replicate. And so I think when we came up to Chicago, we merged our practice with a friend's, and he's been in practice for 30 years. And so the number one challenge was saying, he's got a great practice, but it's impossible to have two of these, mm-hmm. right? And we had a great practice in Miami, but it built around our lifestyle, and this is built around his lifestyle. You know, so the question is, can you make it like a Chipotle without losing the effectiveness? Mm-hmm. So how much can we standardize from the front desk to the patient phone calls, you know, the free consultations, the therapist training, the doc, you know, how much can we standardize, and how much do we need to give freedom that we don't want to over-standardize? Like, I don't want to tell my doctor, this is a protocol, follow it and don't think, right? And so how much can we train them and how much do we have to let things go? Challenge number two, accounting, right? We need our accounting to be very clean. Neurology is a high overhead, right? It's the opposite of what most chiropractors should be, right? In business, in my opinion, most chiropractors should really keep their overhead low, especially in the beginning, and they could always build it up. You know, we've got hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment, yeah. right? And so it really just comes down to how to manage your expenses, your overhead. How do you create enough volume of people into your practice to cover your overhead? Because the second you add this equipment, you want to be a neurology doctor and you see all the fancy equipment at Life or other schools or other places, you know, it's, if you want to start out that way, you got to get busy quick, yeah. and you can be in the hole really quick. So I think the other thing to really is understand your costs, understand your expenses, understand your marketing, understand Google, you know, YouTube, podcasts. You know, we just had a patient last week found us from a podcast, you know, so just how do you understand your SEO? You know, those are all things nowadays. It's not about going out handing out cards. I don't know if you ever did that back in the day, you know, handing out, right? And so that was what you did. Yellow pages, white pages, right? And now it's all, whether we like it or not, it's all Google. You know, I have DuckDuckGo. I use DuckDuckGo. Try finding your local restaurant, DuckDuckGo versus Google, right? Like, Google has a monopoly over businesses and locating businesses. And, you know, understanding Google AdWords to me is really important.
Wait, so I'm still stuck on the business card because I still hand business cards out. So when I hand a business card out to a millennial, they usually look at it and go, that's cool. And I'm thinking they like the card, but really it's concept of what I'm getting right now. Right? It's like, hey, I haven't seen one of these Motorolas in many years. You know, or I heard about these at one point, you know.
When you say it's going to be QR code, and you're just going to scan your QR code. And it's
exactly it. Yeah. Pretty soon we're just going to have QR codes just on our forehead. Well, hey, how are you? Oh, you must be, you're Dave.
Exactly.
You're 6'2", you're basketball. Your neurological function is this. So the question I have is this, because obviously, you know, the people who are listening to us today, they might come from a lot of different walks in chiropractic or different areas, and they might not need to have hundreds of thousands of dollars. But I think that the takeaway is that, you know, just know your business, you know,
your business and education, right? For me, the technology is patient education. It's really not about, I need this technology usually to get this patient better. To me, it's a lot of objectiveness. Like, our clinic is about objective results, right? And so whether you look at BJ, whether you look at other people throughout history, some of the all-time people, no matter what their technique is, they really a lot of times focus on objective results.
Yeah.
And no matter what you did, it was about what can we do to show that we're getting people better.
Yeah.
And so that's really a lot of our clinic's technology is about, can we show objective pre's and posts, not just for the patient education, but for research, hopefully, to prove what we do.
Yeah.
But the therapeutic part of it, a lot of it can do your hands, right? And so I think that's, you know, you don't need the technology in anything you do. It just helps sell sometimes. But really, like you said, it comes down to you as a person, how you connect with people, in what you're passionate in doing and just making sure that you don't make a mistake and put yourself in the hole to prevent you from actually doing what you want to do.
Yeah. So I love it. Wow. Great advice. And I know there's peaks and valleys that go with that, and people are going to be up here and then they're going to fall down. But, you know, I think that's a big thing too, Mary, that we always talk about is that, you know, people always say, can you teach more business at the college? Right. And we can. I mean, if we can fit it into the 4,400 hours that we have to teach, you know, in addition, but a lot of it is you got to go out and learn on your own anyways. You know, you got to step into it. And when it's right for you at that moment to learn it, then you're going to be a lot more aware. Like when you give someone $1,000 and never had money before, they can either go and spend it or they can say, what do I do with this? Right. And how do I invest this? Or it could be $100,000. It doesn't matter. $1 million. Like, what would you do with it? Right. And you don't know what to do with it until you actually have it. You can think about it. But you actually have it. I love it.
And that's great advice about the different types of business too, because I remember learning business in chiropractic college. Yeah. And I remember like sitting there and like it went in one ear. Yeah. It just was like so unrelatable. It was like, I have to pass boards first. There were so many other things, so many hoops I had to jump through. I was like, I'll get to that hoop later.
Yeah. Sometimes there's not that hoop. I think one of the unfortunate things of our profession, and I don't know the solution to it, is there's not a great residency program, right? When you look at a medical doctor or a lot of professions, after they're done, they're 3 to 5 to 7 years still in school, right? Where they're really perfecting their craft.
Right.
I think it's really difficult. A, we don't have the residency program, and B, everyone has their own practice, right? And even if you're busy, if you want to hire someone, I might be too busy to train you, right? Because I might be so busy on my own. That's why I'm hiring you.
That's right.
It's really a tough, like we try our best for training and we try our best to help people that took the extra mile and did extra time. You know, that's better or worse. They spent extra time learning neurology and that's time of their life. So we try our best to pay them well, compensate them, train them as much as we can. Until eventually, you know, it's not, they're going to want more. And there's only so much we can go with them. But really, there's nothing in our profession that really, like, I think it's great what you guys are doing. Because the sad, especially with COVID, more and more kids are opening up on their own.
Right. And you know, the thing is, on the opposite side of what you said, you know, with no residencies and things like that, because that's when medical doctors move into that, then they hook up with a hospital, and then they have a building right attached to the hospital. So when I see you in the hospital, and now, you know, you could be discharged, you're going to come to my office right next door. And I'm sure, I don't know how the business model works with the hospital at that time, but I'm sure there's got to be a connection. But the difference is that with chiropractors, the beautiful piece is that when you do get out, you can go and do what you did. You can become a small business owner. You got a lot more freedom. You don't have anyone who's telling you what you have to do, when you have to do it, how you have to do it, how you have to charge, all those different things. And so there's always that, you know, yin and yang or whatever you want to say. But yeah, and that's probably why we're doing the preceptor program. We, you know, right now our students can go out and preceptor for a year.
Okay.
Yeah, the last year they can be on preceptorship, working in all different places, you know, wherever they want to around the world, to be able to learn what they want to learn, to hone themselves, learn the business, learn this different stuff. You know, there's no better substitute than experience and the school of hard knocks. And I don't care what generation you come from, a school of hard knocks will always, those are lessons you'll always remember.
No, I think that's great, because I think you got to be exposed to different things, because I think sometimes where people can feel missed off or feel like they made a mistake is they go to one place and they get into this way that they can buy into the practice, right? Mm-hmm. Or somehow they take it over, and before they know it, you know, the contract was a little off thing. You know, also, you know, so details can matter, right? And so I think the more, like you said, you get exposure to different things, you know, the more you can be more prepared before you put your, you know, signature on a piece of paper.
Absolutely.
You're going to have to deal with the rest of your life.
Yep. Absolutely. So true.
Well, we've hit that time. I mean, man, it's just been flying.
I know.
And Dave, we always ask two questions. Everyone on our Life by Life West, we always end with two questions. So Mary, I'm going to have you start.
I'll ask the first one. The first one is, if you could go back and speak to Dave Traster, a first quarter student at Life University, what advice would you give him?
I think for me personally, because I was embarked in so much studying, I probably didn't take advantage of the people as much. Like I still have some of my best friends from school, but I would say, you know, it's like we talked about, some people really took advantage of the people and going out and maybe could have went, took more advantage of the school and the teachers and vice versa. So I would say my advice would be take advantage of the full experience, you know, and really not just your good friends, you know, your people in your class that maybe you don't go out with every night, you know. So that would be my number one advice, was really to, you know, be more open to have a stronger communication and connections with other people.
Nice. And Dave, the second question is this, is that same scenario, you know, you are who you are right now, and you're able to speak to Dr. Dave, who just graduated, right? Or maybe just starting. What advice would you give them now, right? As from where you are to that Dr. Dave who just got out of school or just opening a practice?
I think the thing I would say most is it's not a race, it's a marathon. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be open 5 days a week, 12 hours a day. It's okay to take a Friday off and focus on other things besides seeing patients. You know, I think sometimes we get into this clinician mindset where it's just treat, and we underestimate the importance of running the business and taking time out to be with your family or be with your kids or, you know, make phone calls or just do anything but see patients, right? And so I think that's something I'm still trying to get better at. But especially early on, I found myself too often in the clinic with patients and feeling overwhelmed with all the other responsibilities as a business owner.
Yeah.
And I think I undervalued just how important and how much time that stuff takes. I'd see my list of things to do and I'd be like, I'll do it in an hour. And it would take 2 days. How does this take 2 days? You know, it looks really simple.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're on the phone for 2 hours sometimes, right? And so I think, you know, give your time to breathe. You know, if you do what you do, you find a passion, you'll be successful. But, you know, just because you're successful doesn't mean you're happy. So find a balance between, you know, helping people, but also helping yourself.
I love it. I love it. Mary, I remember those days going into the office on a Saturday morning, just get a little paperwork done. I'll see you in you know, 2 hours. And next thing I know, it's 5 o'clock, right? You know, but I love what you said, because it's really more about, you know, are you running the business or is the business running you, you know? And the minute someone starts realizing that the business is running them, meaning, you know, oh, I can't leave because I don't this, or I can't, you know, whatever, that the business is running them. And that's the time to get out. That's the time to take that vacation, to move. Cause you know what, the business is going to be there when you come back, you know, and it's a whole different mindset. So Dave, awesome. Hey, thank you, man. We, you know, Mary and I love you. And you know that, and we've known you for many, many years. We just appreciate all you're doing in chiropractic and everything that you're doing, teaching and having your practices and all the things that you've done and will do, you know, as one of the future leaders in chiropractic. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys having me, and obviously I appreciate everything guys you do. And, you know, I'm obviously close to people you're close with. And so I'm hoping to get out to Denver soon and, you know, and hang out with them too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And give our love to Kelsey and Dylan.
I will. Definitely. Well, I don't know if you heard him screaming a minute ago. But
yeah. Perfect. We love it. We love
it.
He's
so cute.
And to our viewers, we want to thank you. Thank you for tuning in today. Thank you for being with us, you know, week after week. This is a Life by Life West. We drop these every other week. The opposite weeks, we drop our Life West leadership line. Dave said a lot of great things today. And, you know, if you rewind this and listen to it, I guarantee you, you're going to pick up on some golden gems. And please share this, share it with people who you know, somebody who just might need to hear something about the business or need to hear something about how to get the passion or whatever it is. You know, it's always good to share, keep feeding. What we nourish our brains is more important. You know, the toxicities we could put up here are probably the worst than the toxicities we put here. So keep nourishing this brain and doing all the things that you can do to create a brighter future for humanity by working with the people that you work with. And until we come back again with another Life by Life West, the three of us, Dr. Dave, Dr. Mary, myself, will bid you adieu. And we so appreciate you tuning in.
Thank you for joining us today. And for the love, commitment, and passion you emanate every day.
Together, we know we will make this world a better place.